This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
We heard a lot about science and other subjects relating to exploration earlier today, and a lot more than I'd ever heard before. And I thank those speakers. It was a wonderful experience. What I wanted to resort to now is a rather baser interest, not necessarily of Leichhardt's, but of those people who supported him. And if we think about exploration, yes, it is about science, it is about novelty, adventure, revealing the unknown, personal quests, and many other topics. But in the eyes of many people, and particularly those people who supported Leichhardt, it's about land. And it's about access to an acquisition of land. And I'm going to focus on a particular expedition of Leichhardt's, which is not particularly well covered, and of an acquisition that we've also been lucky enough to pick up last year. Marcel Arasseau, who translated the known Leichhardt letters in the 1960s, listed the surviving original draft maps as well. These included a rough outline of the northeast coast of Australia for the Port Essington expedition, held by the Mitchell Library, and a large-scale plan on 10 sheets and a reduction of that also held at the Mitchell. There are a few rough geological sketches in his journal, some of which we saw today, but otherwise no known map sheets drawn by Leichhardt of his second attempted grand expedition to Peak Downs, ultimately, and as far as anybody knows, none of the third. I'm going to talk about the Ballon River expedition, which has not been mentioned today. The first map I'm going to show you is this one, which is the one that people, I suppose, chiefly associate with Leichhardt. It was run off in the Hibernian printing office in Sydney in 1846. It was by Samuel Perry, not by Leichhardt, although it includes some of Leichhardt's mapping. It was a popular map of a celebrated expedition and widely distributed. Leichhardt and his writings express some pleasure at seeing this map because, as you can see, it covers the distance more than any other Australian land explorer to date. It's the first of a number of printed maps of Leichhardt's expeditions, particularly of the Port Essington expedition, which begin to appear. But actually, one of only three maps printed in his lifetime, that is, that he had a hand in. Here's another far more detailed map, actually titled A Detailed Map, of Dr. Ludwig Leichhardt's route in Australia from Moreton Bay to Port Essington, etc., etc., by John Arrowsmith, 1847. The library has digitised this and all its early exploration maps, which you can see on our website. This is only a small portion of a map on six sheets showing Leichhardt's route, or part of it, and including some of his notes on geology and vegetation. It shows all the qualities that made Arrowsmith a collector's favourite and the choice of the British government of the time for military and ordnance survey mapping and for taxation purposes. In 1834, Arrowsmith published the London Atlas, which was considered the best set of such maps then in existence. He was known to be particularly favourable to publishing Australian and other colonial surveys. In this map, we can actually see a little of the Western Condamine and Ballon, which I can barely see here, but Cecil Plains, there's the Western Condamine and the, going down to the Ballon there, which Leichhardt skirted on his way up to Port Essington. He had he had time in his dotage to reflect on a long life of expeditioning, we would have had an entirely different record available to us. But as we know, Leichhardt's exploring days were numbered and his maps are extremely scarce. So we were very pleased when last year one came up for sale and we were able to pick it up. Doubly surprising was a copy not listed by Arasso. This is a map of the South Queensland Downs of the Ballon Condamine River system, stretching in the north to the Dawson. drawn in September 1847. I think you'll agree it's not a particularly pretty map, but there are a few characteristics which make this one interesting. Most obviously that it was dedicated by Leichhardt in his own hand to the recipient Arthur Hodgson. Leichhardt had 14 copies of the map run off. We know this from his journal, and one dedicated to Henry Stuart Russell is held by the State Library of New South Wales. These two maps are the only known survivors of an expedition rarely considered, and the last known mapping by Leichhardt. On the surface, it would seem an unremarkable map of an unremarkable side journey between the failed Peak Downs expedition and his final outing. This exploration of the Western Darling Downs, an area recently called Fitzroy Downs by Thomas Mitchell after the new governor of New South Wales, is given a brief treatment in Colin Roderick's book, Leichhardt the Dauntless Explorer. But other than this, it's usually ignored or omitted. A recent publication for schools that I saw doesn't mention it, and in fact includes other repetitions of things that have been subsequently corrected, so I'm hoping that we can do so more of this today. I hope when you hear the following, you'll see this expedition in a different light also. It was brief, 6 weeks, and limited in scope, covering a few rivers in the Western Downs. So perhaps its omission is understandable. What I'd like to assert about this relatively minor undertaking, of which our map is the only known depiction, together with the one in the State Library of New South Wales, is a role to play in advancing our understanding of his motivations and of his relationship with the Downs. Drawn just 6 months before the final departure of the Leichhardt party from Jimba Station in March, April 1848, this map encapsulated an expedition that, as far as Leichhardt is concerned, exercised some demons and righted some wrongs, as well as making some practical contributions to settlement ambitions of his squatter supporters. At one level, the map tells the story of a locality Leichhardt knew well, the Darling Downs. It was from here that he commenced most of his expeditioning and drew much of his support base, where he recuperated and felt comfortable, and where in conversation with the squatters he renewed his expeditioning urge. I want to now put to you a list. This is the cast of characters for the Boulogne map. It's from Leichhardt's journal of the recipients of the Boulogne River map in 1847. It includes some of his strongest supporters, mostly Darling Downs squatters, who themselves benefited from his explorations. Of those listed here, I found images of Arthur Hodgson, pictured top centre and right in younger years, Henry Russell, nearest Leichhardt there, Joshua Bell in the centre, bottom left is Christopher Rolleston, and to his right, Samuel Perry. The outsiders on the list are John Arrowsmith, the London publisher, with a penchant for Australiana, Arthur Sidney Lyon, the publisher of the brand new Moreton Bay Courier, much later the Courier Mail, and Samuel Perry, the surveyor who produced the popular map for Leichhardt. The remaining characters in Leichhardt's notebooks and recipients of the map were landholders on the Downs. Most had assisted with donations of animals or equipment or hospitality and would do so again. As they are at home on the land, let's put them there. The first of these is Eaton Vale. This is the station owned from 1840 by the squatter Arthur Hodgson, owner of one of the first stations in the Downs. Hodgson was later active in politics as prime mover behind the Moreton Bay and Northern District Separation Association, a trenchant advocate of convict labour and restricted voting franchise. He was a general manager of the Australasian Agricultural Company and for many years the member for Darling Downs and Clarence, and later Minister for Public Works and Goldfields in the 1860s Mackenzie Ministry. He was educated at Eton, hence Eton Vale. He entered the Navy and after reaching Sydney, like so many others, sought to occupy the choicest pastoral country, which he did in the newly opened up territory of Darling Downs in 1840. After some early reverses, Eton Vale became the centre of Darling Downs society. Leichhardt first visited there in 1844 and took on Hodgson's younger brother Pemberton for a time on his first expedition. Cecil Plains is the property of Henry Stuart Russell. He was the son of an East India Company officer educated at Harrow. He reached the Downs in 1840 also and stayed for a time with Hodgson. Something of an explorer himself, Russell wrote the quirky tome Genesis of Queensland, which I challenge you to read, and it includes a copy of the Balonne River map. Cecil Plains Station stretched for about 30 miles either side of the Condamine River. Russell took part in a couple of exploring expeditions looking for suitable land around the Boyne River. He was first visited at Cecil Plains by Ludwig Leichhardt in 1844, and Leichhardt went on that way many times again, including his last ill-fated expedition. Other dedicatees included the squatter politician Joshua Bell, who owned the famous Jimba Station on the northern edge of the Downs, from where Leichhardt set out to Port Essington and to where he returned defeated after his second expedition. There were the station owners Matthew Gogg. His first station on Acacia Creek had a carrying capacity of 6,000 sheep, while his later station, Chinchilla, had an area of 37,000 acres. James Blythe, Leichhardt first met on his return from Peak Downs in 1847, while the newcomer was looking for suitable land to claim as his own. Likewise, John Danger, not yet a property holder in the area, but soon to be one. James Garnett Ewer, another whom we know benefited from Leichhardt's Balonne explorations, and a Campbell is either the Campbell brothers, John, Colin or Archibald, who owned the 60,000 acre Glengallen Station, or Robert Campbell and James Andrew, owners of John Darien, 65,000 acres in area. Then there's Fred Isaac, who owned the Gowrie run of 50,000 acres on, if I can find Gowrie. Oh, there's John Darien, and finally Gowrie. Then, of course, Christopher Rolleston is not there. How do I go back? This one. Yeah, gotcha. Not listed there because his locality was Darling Downs, is Christopher Rolleston, who we saw a photograph of. He arrived as Governor Gipps' new Commissioner of Lands for the Downs in the mid-1840s, allowing the squatters to register their lands. Last but not least, Thomas Alford, innkeeper of the house that Leichhardt enjoyed on several occasions, for it was very agreeable to have a bit of comfort after the rough life in the bush. And his house was one of the earliest buildings that formed the basis of the township of Drayton. But let's return to Leichhardt on the tail end of his attempt to cross westwards in 1846-47, a journey that expired prematurely and exasperatingly for the explorer right at the point he was to turn west. As we've heard today, he returned in triumph from his Port Essington expedition and was inspired to undertake an even more ambitious campaign. The contrast with the former journey could not be starker. Following the same departure route from the Downs and across the eastern rivers, the streams had become swollen and impassable, and Leichhardt and his party had endured 7 months bogged in the mud of outback Queensland, lost most of their stock, and contracted dengue fever, by all accounts, not to mention attacks of sandflies and hemorrhoids. When complaints of and inconstancy of some of his fellow expeditioners forced Leichhardt to accept defeat, they had covered a mere 800 kilometres. Compare this with an impressive 4,800 to Port Essington. It was still an exhausting expedition, and Leichhardt and the other expeditioners must have been depleted in every way imaginable. So it seems odd that another expedition could be mounted so quickly, just 2 weeks after returning. We know that Leichhardt nursed rheumatic limbs, and by Russell's account adopted the drastic remedy of positioning his shoulder over a burning lamp. Whether apocryphal or not, this description of rheumatic torture has some basis in truth if you try to read Leichhardt's journals after the Peak Downs expedition. Remarkably, within 2 weeks of returning to Cecil Plains, he and his working men, for he'd shed the gentleman he'd foolishly recruited previously, set out to fill in some detail of the Western Downs. On the one hand, the expedition to the Downs in the aftermath of the failed second campaign is a puzzle. Perhaps the rivalry with Sir Thomas Mitchell explains some of it. As he sat at Cecil Plains in July 1847, Leichhardt could read and reflect on Mitchell's recent discoveries. He found that Mitchell had travelled to the west of him, further distant than Leichhardt had been in that direction, and claimed the much hoped for course to the Northern River system was within his grasp. It's worth recounting a little of Mitchell's fourth expedition here to explain how Leichhardt might have felt. We've heard a little bit of this today, but for emphasis, I'll just repeat a brief account of what Mitchell was claiming. While he had been flogging himself fruitlessly, that is Leichhardt, Thomas Mitchell had been in the field and returned declaring that his Victoria River flowed into the Gulf of Carpentaria. Mitchell had himself been somewhat frustrated by lack of government support for his plans to explore northwards and saw with some regret the success of Leichhardt's Port Essington explorations, wherein Leichhardt became, as most thought at the time, the most important figure in the history of exploration of northern Australia. Succeeding finally to secure government funds, Mitchell set out on a more westerly route to the north than Leichhardt had followed, exploring the idea of a constant stream to the Gulf. Proceeding from the junction of the Darling and the Macquarie Rivers past the Boulogne and up along the Maranoa, as he noted early on in his journal, he hoped this would prove to be even more important than his discovery of Australia Felix 10 or more years previously, and, in his own words, the most momentous achievement of Australian exploration. In fact, though a great deal of useful territory was mapped, rather than an Australian Mississippi, Edmund Kennedy returned in February 1848, having established that Mitchell's Victoria flowed not north but southeast to be part of Cooper's Creek. He named the Victoria the Barcoo, as we've heard today. The map by Raphael Clint here shows the two expeditions, Leichhardt's Port Essington and Mitchell's fourth expedition a year or so later. Another popular map in its day, you can see that Mitchell skirted the Boulogne in April 1846, in this territory here, declaring it as fine, and crossed it on several occasions, declaring it as fine a looking river as I've seen in the colony. Travelling further north, at times inspired by the greater imagined goal, he described the hitherto unexplored lands to the northwest of the Darling Downs as the finest country I've ever seen in a primeval state. This champagne region he named Fitzroy Downs after the new governor. Further north, at the Barcoo, Mitchell believed he was within striking distance of a stream he imagined was traceable to the remotest verge of the horizon and which he named the Victoria. However, as you can see in this map, the river turns back on itself. Troubled by dwindling supplies and leaving the pass to Carpentaria still unexplored, Mitchell returned in December 1846, short of his findings but short of his goals. Leichhardt, meanwhile, was still bogged. If we wind forward to Cecil Plains in July 1847, Leichhardt has returned, but Kennedy is yet to report in with the Barcoo correction. And at almost the same moment that Leichhardt is at Cecil Plains writing an account of his journey and trying to find some positives, Mitchell arrived in London looking to publish his account of his 1845-46 expedition written during the 4 months voyage. As Leichhardt says in letters to friends and colleagues, "I find he has crossed my track at Expedition Range, but farther west than I did. His Mudge Key is the most distant of my Christmas range. His Nagoa is my Comet River, though I did not go as far to see the junction of the Salvator and the Claude." Leichhardt was unwilling to accept some of Mitchell's claims and sought to bring them within his own discoveries. As he says in a letter to King and to Lind, "His Beliando turns out to be my Cape, and his Victoria will turn out to be the Clark." In this detail, Leichhardt is wrong. The Barcoo, as Kennedy renames it, does not reach up to the lower Burdekin. Leichhardt was ready beforehand to cast doubt on the larger claim, already being trumpeted in London, of a river leading to India. It was a declaration most geographers doubted, but which Leichhardt could not ignore. Sitting there at Cecil Plains, he wrote a hint of schadenfreude on the page, "Poor Kennedy and Sir Thomas will be sadly disappointed if that is not the case." Interestingly, while Leichhardt makes no direct mention of Mitchell's claims of a northwestern river system, he is keen to consider Sir Thomas's track as the starting point for his next journey westward, acknowledging its use as a road to move north. Before that enterprise could be commenced, he set out to examine the country between my track and Fitzroy Downs to check the land between his previous and Mitchell's. Perhaps also he needed to put some distance between the Surrey Peak Downs venture and resuming the westward quest. Certainly, to achieve the feat, he realised he needed to shore up his Darling Downs support to obtain moral support and material backing. And on their part, there was an ever-present need for land expressed by the squatters as the downs began to fill up. Reports from Mitchell's expedition of land in the Western Downs and Mount Abundance area had already spread across the colony, and people were beginning to head west over the ranges to take up country. In fact, almost the first news Leichhardt received on his return from Peak Downs in June 1847 could have come from one of his dedicatees, James Blyth, who was with his partner Arthur Chevelle being allowed a temporary squattage by another, Matthew Gogg. It was apparently Chevelle and Blyth's gunshots that the Leichhardt party heard on arrival at Dogwood Creek on the then northern limits of the Downs. We know from Leichhardt's journals that James Ewer was also in the area when the party arrived. Though we don't know what conversations ensued, Leichhardt departed for the Western Downs soon afterwards, and we'll see later that Ewer, Gogg, Danger, and others took note of Leichhardt's findings. On balance, there were too many reasons why this brief sortie made sense than would be denied by disappointment or ill health. In his lengthy article on the Ballon expedition published in October 1847 in the Sydney Morning Herald, Leichhardt set out in detail the journal of his expedition. The starting point was Cecil Plains on 9 August 1847. It doesn't seem as though he'd left there after his previous trip. If the Peak Downs campaign was wrecked by the want of good comrades, as Leichhardt termed it, the Ballon sortie was to comprise only the working men. Considering the experience they'd just endured, this must have seemed lunacy to some. However, they completed it with relative ease. They followed a dray track to Gogg Station here at the head of Acacia Creek, which leads down to the Dogwood onto the Ballon, an extension of the Condamine. They then travelled southward down Acacia Creek to the Dogwood and then continued westward, checking and mapping a number of wet and dry creeks up and down and regarding the country from undulating ironbark forests and open box plains, both considered good, rigolo acacia scrub, not as good, to low, puffy or scrubby mile country and soft, boggy ground, both not at all good. Leichhardt reported seeing a number of large Aboriginal groups, he surmises, gathering for a bunya bunya feast. The explorers eventually tired of the ceaseless ridges and scrub, and Leichhardt returned to Cecil Plains on September 20, where he drew the map. The expedition seemed to restore both health and confidence, and Leichhardt was able to make a number of corrections regarding Mitchell's expedition. These are too numerous to go into here, but his notes include new and recalculated distances, coordinates and elevations. Overall, his assessment of the country was not particularly flattering. He concluded that should stations be formed on the heads of these various creeks, the respective roads will have to follow down the creek and join the main road along the Ballon. Moreton Bay, remembering, is over here, which would be rendered extremely circuitous and difficult by numerous gullies, backwaters and deep creeks which join that river. He claimed that the stations would then become isolated and as a result of broad belts of scrubby country intervening between the creeks. He also assessed that the powerful tribes along the Ballon and its numerous lagoons would be dangerous enemies along the scrubs, which would allow them, quote, a secure retreat from settlers' aggressions. He concluded that, considering the long and precarious land carriage and the high rate of wages, particularly in remote stations, I do not believe that sheep farming will pay even as far as Horse Track Creek. which is here. And as regards transport, he concluded that the distance from Brisbane to the junction of the Cagoon and the Ballon would be prohibitive. According to his estimate, 332 miles and 400 if considering it as a dray road. Looking further to the north and west, his overall assessment politely undercuts the Mitchell claim about Fitzroy Downs. While he is inclined to believe Mitchell on some points, he did not think that the patches of open country seen by Mitchell would form an uninterrupted belt of downs to the east of the Grafton Range. After the Ballon expedition, Leichhardt was able to say in a letter to his brother-in-law that rather than having lost a year of his life, that he was now reasonably happy with his fellow expeditioners and was consumed with preparations for his new journey to begin in May 1848. Here Leichhardt sets out the options for his route into the interior. He also makes mention of the Ballon map. As soon as I have arranged a map in a smaller scale, comprising at the same time the Dawson and Robinson, I shall send it to Mr. Rolleston, to whom I promised it, Rolleston being the Land Commissioner. And with Rolleston, so naturally to the squatters. Here we can see land taken up in the western fringes of the Downs between late 1847 and 1849. Perhaps Leichhardt had underestimated the country. Downs pastoralist Fred Isaac travelled with Leichhardt to Sydney after the Ballon expedition. He obviously liked what he heard, because in 1849 he took up Dulacca, which had an area of 56,000 acres. James Ewer took up the run of Yamo, supplementing his previous holdings. Matthew Gogg, who had a station on the Cassia Creek, took up Chinchilla in 1848, considered by most to be a far superior run. And John Danger took up Wallen, also in 1848. The latecomer Blythe attempted to set up a station on Leichhardt's Horse Track Creek, where he estimated an early run was not recommended, and by all accounts failed there. All in all, though, I believe a tolerable addition. And that's what I have for you today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Martin. Always interesting to see that relationship between exploration or explorers and squatters, because, of course, in Leichhardt's case, although his main interest was science, he couldn't do what he wanted to do without the support of landholders, who were, of course, the group in society who had the most to gain through the results of trips like this. So, some questions for Martin. Yes, Dick?
Thank you very much, Martin, for a wonderful presentation on it. You mentioned mountain abundance, and I read somewhere, I can't recall where, I think it was in an old Hemisphere magazine actually, that Leichhardt left a dray there on his return from there. And I wondered, there appears to be copious correspondence in some library. I wondered whether anyone's looked into that in detail to see whether there's any further comments about Leichhardt in that. I certainly haven't. Thank you.
Now, I can't say that I have either. It's interesting when you mention Leichhardt and drays and relationship, his relationship with bullocks, in that he certainly harnessed his expeditions to bullocks, and you know, particularly with the Peak Downs, the great disaster is losing all of the cattle. It's one of the great disasters. There are several others. However, he was willing to leave them and proceed on. The difference you see in examining Mitchell, who by this stage was 50, I think, and Leichhardt, who was 33 or 4 at this time, is that Mitchell never left the bullocks, the drays. And in fact, the mistake that people have observed that he made when looking off in the distance to imagine the Victoria is that he can see from the top of the hill this string of trees into the distance. But he's unwilling to proceed further because his supplies are running low. And he can't see, as Kennedy later does, and as Leichhardt surmised, that river was going nowhere. But yes, sorry, I can't answer your question.
Any other questions for Martin?
David Nash, just a simple question. How accurate is this map?
a lot more accurate than what was there previously. He had by this stage been taking coordinates. So if you compare this with the, this is an 1880s pastoral map, it lines up pretty well. The orientation is slightly different for some reason. All of the previous maps, the one by Clint that we saw comparing the two expeditions, which was taken beforehand, had no detail of any of the rivers. No one was really sure in which direction each of the rivers went. They suspected they led up from the Ballon, and this supported the idea of a kind of northern river system. So it was important for Leichhardt to map that out. But I think quite accurate, and perhaps his cartography is underestimated. He certainly could navigate using his wits and observation of the direction of rivers and the lay of the land, and the geology, of course. But I think he benefited from a relationship with P.P. King in the mid-1840s, who was the celebrated hydrographer and navigator himself.
No further questions? Well, thank you very much, Martin, for your presentation.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.